The PFD application is open. Just a small amount of your PFD will help share local news and stories about Alaskans with Alaskans across this great state when you choose Alaska Public Media through Pick, Click, Give.
Coming up on Hometown Alaska, join me, producer Ammon Swenson, as I interview the co-author of the book Random Kindness and Senseless Acts of Beauty. Hear ways to celebrate National Random Acts of Kindness Day tomorrow and all year long. I also showcase Alaska Public Media's project that recognizes people doing good in our community and let you know how you can help. And on State of Art, join me, Ammon Swenson, again for a repeat episode of State of Art because I'm just one man and I just didn't have it in me this week. We'll hear from artist Addie Studebaker, who was the recipient of a Rasmussen Individual Artist Award. She tells us about her unique public art and her upcoming project combining spectrograms and sculpture. That's all coming up next on Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media.
The PFD application is open. Just a small amount of your PFD will help share local news and stories about Alaskans with Alaskans across this great state when you choose Alaska Public Media through Pick, Click, Give.
Hello and welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm producer Ammon Swenson. Today on the show, we'll be showcasing a fun project here at Alaska Public Media honoring people doing good in our community. We'll hear some of those pieces and I'll tell you how you can help us out. But first, tomorrow's National Random Acts of Kindness Day, so it seemed fitting to be joined by my guest, Paloma Pavel. She's the co-author of the book Random Kindness and Senseless Acts of Beauty. At first glance, the book looks like children's literature, but is a parable of sorts, showing how through small acts, we can break away from behaviors that lead to violence and war by making new choices and working together. Pavel's co-author, Anne Herbert, is credited with coining the phrase Random Kindness and Senseless Acts of Beauty back in 1982, and the words and sentiments spread from there. Pavel moved to Anchorage about 2 years ago and works on Providence Hospital's Spiritual Care and Clinical Pastoral Education team. She grew up in California and credits her dad's humanitarian work as a doctor crossing the border into Mexico as a pivotal influence on her future path. Despite a high level of education, she feels that she's grown the most from real-world experiences.
Part of what brings me to Alaska is that I have roots as a wilderness guide. I actually built a retreat and conference center by hand on the coast of Maine and lived without electricity, running water for many years. And that is part of my learning and education prior to being also at Harvard and London School of Economics. But these grow out of, I think, a immigrant passion for education that was instilled in me at an early age, and also a longing for answering the big questions of what is needed at this moment in time to heal not only people but planet, and how nurturance of our community makes a difference to how we feel and how we are able to carry out our lives.
How would you say that the immigrant mindset from your grandparents maybe influenced how you see or, you know, act in the world?
A sense of gratitude of home. You know, we are here. This home does not belong to us in the biggest sense, that we are all gifted with the opportunity to be on this planet in whatever place we are, and how we struggle to get here out of necessity or deprivation or aspiration. If we really look deeply at each one of our stories, we are in a kind of migration on planet Earth. So we're all on a journey from birth to death on this planet. And I think in my own journey, I've lived on the coast of Maine. I was part of a Benedictine community. I, in silence, also have lived in urban centers, worked a lot on frontline community concerns in the Bay Area, but also across the United States and in other countries too. And I'm inspired by how people come together and make a place.
Let's talk about the book Random Kindness and Senseless Acts of Beauty.
We are so thrilled to be in the, just had the 30th anniversary edition of the book. And the movement started on a napkin. We took this phrase that in response to the Rodney King incident. So here, if you can imagine, seeing something in the news that causes a sense of your heart to just break open and shock, horror. I think we're having some of that right now in the news. And what, asking yourself the question, what can I do? So in response to Rodney King incident, we took the phrase random violence and senseless acts of cruelty. And we said, how do we reverse this? How do we create, how do we break the spell of ongoing violence that we see and innovate, create a different way of thinking right from the source, right from the origins of where it's starting in our own hearts and minds and in our institutionalized practices. Mm-hmm. So we took the word random kindness instead of violence and senseless acts of beauty instead of cruelty. And it caught fire. It became from there on a napkin in a diner in Sausalito in Mill Valley with my collaborator and work partner Ann Herbert and I, to then becoming a bumper sticker. We began just doing spontaneous acts, taking our attention into what can we do, as Bucky Fuller was saying, just invent something better. How do we take our attention away and withhold our consent to violence and plant seeds that go in another direction, reach out to the people in our own backyard?
Essentially, if people haven't seen it, it looks just kind of like a regular children's book illustrated. But as you go through, it's simple phrasing, but it's kind of discussing what you were talking about, kind of, you know, finding new ways to do things and improve the existing systems that might lead us to war and violence and stuff like that. Could you maybe elaborate a little bit more?
Oh, yeah. In the same way that violence builds on itself, that it can grow and reverberate and amplify so that when there's a kind of retribution, action back, when someone hits you and you feel frustrated and you want to cut somebody off at the freeway, and then that leads to other anxiety and pressure and violence in our lives and in our workplaces and in our families and in our communities, so that these build, these cycles of violence expand. So can kindness. It's a powerful force. Kindness is contagious. It's also the word kindness is a wonderful word. It's packed. It has the word kin inside of it. And we're often kind to those we consider kin, those who we think of as being like us. Mm-hmm. But the real power of kindness is to expand our circle of care, to folks who we may think of as being different from us or even opposed or frightening. So how do we expand that circle of kin with the power and amplification of kindness? And so it can grow too. It can be a revolution.
Can you tell me more about your co-author, Ann Herbert? How did you get to know each other? And then, you know, you mentioned the origins of the phrase and it kind of, you know, getting written on a napkin. But yeah, where did your relationship start with Anne?
So Anne and I, she's since passed away, died. And she was a writer for the Stuart Brand and the Coevolutionary Quarterly. Beautiful, amazing writer and inspiring activist who often learned and got her firsthand knowledge in the streets, open to learning from everyone and everything around her. Originally came from Ohio and was nurtured and loved and appreciated in the Bay Area. And we found ourselves at many of the same events, inspiring change in the Bay Area, and began working together in activism in response to the Persian Gulf War. Yeah. Which we felt was another example, like Rodney King, of being taken towards something that wasn't really our consent wanting to resist that effort. So the book is illustrated. So it came out first as a bumper sticker, and then we began taking actions, just doing and noticing, and what the power of putting your attention on things that are building and growing good can be extremely surprising, exhilarating, and contagious. So we started noticing that, doing small things from, you know, planting seeds in a vacant lot to parking meters to paying the toll of someone behind you. Those are kind of easy actions that you can take right away. Shoveling somebody's driveway here in Anchorage who might be unable to do it themselves. So taking actions which make a difference in each other's lives. And then seeing that begin to grow, and there became media attention on that action. And that was part of what amplified it, was a number of articles and interviews that began taking place. And people liked it. They wanted to do it. And so we made a bumper sticker and then Practice Random Kindness and Senseless Acts of Beauty. And that went viral. And,
well, it sounds like, you know, the phrase might have, I'm not encouraging graffiti, but it does sound like the phrase started appearing in public places as well as like a positive message. You know, granted, it might have been spray painted on a wall, but the message was getting out there.
Correct. And it's also something that there is within each one of us a kind of spark, a kind of moral compass that we have lost some sight of in our civil society. And this sense of tapping into that power that's in each one of us, I think, is part of why it went viral and why it's contagious. Because people are bred for connection, are actually wanting to be in that state of welcoming, of justice, of love.
Yeah, I wonder, it makes me wonder, you know, I mean, even in my own life, you know, how many times have I walked past somebody in need where my first inclination was to be like, oh, I wonder if they need help, but get in my own head, nah, keep going type of a thing, where we almost convince ourselves to do the opposite of what our natural inclination might be because of, I don't know, society and fear. Exactly. Who is this person? They're a stranger. I don't know them.
You mentioned the book, the look of it, that it can appear as a children's book. But what is surprising about this, we are very lucky that our colleague and friend, Mayumi Oda, who's an extraordinary artist, originally born in Japan and very much impacted by Hiroshima. She researched a 12th century scroll called the Chojujiga. Okay. And that shows these animal figures where people actually organized each other with this picture language who were illiterate and actually won. They actually were successful in organizing themselves through a picture language. So the animals here, who are also teachers in the book, show us how to be more human, how to learn to help each other through playful and humorous and touching examples in her visual vocabulary. But I want to just honor Mayumi Oda as a lifelong activist.
You know, we've kind of talked about the impact of the book, but I mean, you know, it's gotten all this recognition. Could you talk about the 30th anniversary book? There was some kind of cool additions to, you know, updates from what happened to the book originally, not just in appearance.
Yes. So we started out publishing this by our local copy shop, just making our own handmade, hand-drawn copy. And we gave it to 10 friends, and they wrote us back and said, hey, you know, I give this away. I want more to hand out and share. This really represents what's at the core of what I most care about in the world and believe in. And some people described it as sort of a spiritual but not religious book, something that had a kind of core value to it that's you could say yes to. So we began distributing copies of that and making more. And Mayumi received one of those and said, I really want to illustrate this. And that's how we got to her her illustrations. And when it kept growing and developing, and we put out a 20th anniversary edition, and we kept hearing back from people, we need this message now more than ever. It's a timeless message. It's an urgent message. And so our publisher, New Village Press, Lynn Elizabeth, New York City, said, this 30th anniversary edition is now needed more than ever. And how do we bring folks awake to the importance of the human side of this, of how do we care for each other in society? And so we felt that Desmond Tutu, who had been our mentor way back in graduate school, asked if he would, with his inspiration and his leadership and his role modeling of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, which is such an example of kindness rather than bloodshed and revenge in response to being held back with a vote for the Black Africans of South Africa for so many years. So he was so gracious to write our foreword. And I'd like to share the opening. It's what I think we all feel right now. We are living in an historic moment. When I hear those words, I just have to say, this guy is so joyful. Look at what he's been through and what he's seen and what he has attended and how deeply he has seen the suffering and the violence around him and could respond with bitterness, with anger, and with outrage and violence. But he has come back with joy and exuberance. And so let me start over. We are living in an historic moment, and we are each called to take part in a great transformation. Our survival as a species is threatened by global warming, economic meltdown, and an ever-increasing gap between rich and poor. And yet, these threats offer an opportunity to awaken as an interconnected and beloved community. That's what's happening right now.
Well, let's talk about Random Acts of Kindness Day, which will take place tomorrow. I gotta say, is National Random Acts of Kindness Day a big day for you?
Well, Ed, I think it is. I think what happens when we have dedicated days is that we know it's something that we want to infuse every day with. So it's a day of celebration and a day of remembrance, but it's also something that we want to really sink our roots deeper into throughout our lives. So it's meant to be a day that encourages us to break through our trance and to act in the ways that we know we want to be every day. So Random Kindness Day started in the 90s, and we have Random Kindness Week that goes from the 14th to the 19th in February. And it's a kind of, I like to think of it as a community Valentine. It's sort of a deeper love than what we see in the greeting cards. Yeah. It's how do we move it into action, feel it in our bones? How do we say, yes, I want to actually take on profound, deep, abiding love of not only who I am being alive in this planet, love, self-love of ourselves and of what our own capacities for creativity are, but also one another, and to bring on the next generation while also caring for elders who have been here all along. The measure of a civilization is often how it treats its elders as well as its young. And it's time for us to grow up, to wake up, and to refind our kinship.
I mean, speaking of, you know, refinding our kinship or discovering ways to, or being creative and finding new ways to spread kindness, I was looking at the Random Acts of Kindness Foundation website. Mm-hmm. It's got a lot of cool resources for, like, kindness in schools, at home, at work, you know, all sorts of resources. Just, you know, in your opinion, how would you suggest people start with just, you know, their own random acts of kindness? Maybe they unconsciously do it, but maybe now they just kind of want to maybe be more conscientious about spreading kindness, doing good.
Great. I love how it's easy. It's easy. And it's also, we can, it's as it begins spreading, we can think of kindness on different scales. So in terms of initial actions, there are anything, you know, look around. Look, who lives on either side of you? Is there a note you could write to someone, a casserole you could take over, muffins you could share, make a chili that is for the ball game coming up and take it to your neighbor, surprise someone with, put a note in your child's lunchbox that tells them you love them and how super amazing they are and what their superpowers are. So it's think across generations, think across, just stand there and look to either side of you and see who's around you, that whose life you can brighten in some way within your families, within your neighborhood, within your city. And also thinking about who's crying out. I have the privilege of working at Providence Hospital, where we have folks coming in to the ED every day who are suffering frostbite and various suffering from not having adequate living conditions. I would say to join in your communities, in your schools, in your faith community, if you have one. And if you don't, that's a place to create community. I feel very grateful for the faith community that I have found here, but also the civic mindedness among musicians, among artists, among wilderness and sports folks here. There's that sense of joining with, whether it's picking up trash or whether it's helping someone in a wheelchair get onto transport or get their groceries out, being, I think, expanding our peripheral vision, seeing with new eyes, seeing with the eyes of those who may not be able to have those words of asking for help, could use a hand, could use a smile. But on another level, we also want to begin asking, how do we want to live in community? There's a way of thinking about placemaking.
Do you think that, I mean, I wonder if people ever get hung up on the random aspect? Because I feel like it could be a totally intentional acts of kindness as well.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And maybe that's how you get started. Like, if you want to build it into your kind of personal life system or whatever, maybe schedule some acts of kindness until they become kind of...
Well, that word random is an interrupter. And it's like we get into grooves, we kind of fall asleep, we get in kind of repeating ways of doing things. So the word random is a way of breaking loose of that. It's a way of getting free of the usual way you do things that may be limiting your life and the life of those around you. So random is a way to say, check it out.
Whenever.
Give it a go. Do a dance in a new direction and see what might happen. It's take a risk.
Follow that kind impulse.
Yes. Follow that one. And let your... Follow where it leads you to a new relationship to yourself, to the people around you. Take a risk. So random is a way of shaking loose, breaking loose, and opening the imagination, because that, I think, is that we get into this, we can't do it, it's always been done this way. And I think part of envisioning something like a compassionate anchorage or a way of thinking at a city scale or a regional scale has happened here in Anchorage. That's what I love about this city.
I want to kind of shift gears just a little bit to, there are some selfish benefits to being kind to others. It can help your health. Could you kind of talk about some of the health benefits of just being kind to people?
What is amazing to me about this is that it is biological. That when you look at the brain science, and the Greater Good Science Center at the University of California, Berkeley, has been studying the neurobiology of altruism and of kindness. And what they're finding is that when you do an act of kindness, you actually affect the release of oxytocin and serotonin in your brain and in your body. And actually even observing an act of kindness also alters your brain and body. it also has an increase of your immune system and your immunity. That they've actually been studying this and seeing that the immune system can be affected up to 50% increase of all the indicators in the body by acts of kindness and goodness and altruism in the world. And so this is something that is not, it's self-reinforcing, because it's, some people call it the helper's high. It is actually a brain-body communication that says more of this. Yeah. This is a good thing.
Yeah.
Let's increase our health, and let's increase our health around us. And so isn't that amazing?
Why not be kind then, right? You know, I guess just in your professional work, your activism, just in your life, like, have you seen some of these benefits personally or in others, and kind of maybe have you seen anybody's life change or anything like that?
Absolutely. I have been seeing this happening over the 30 years that I've been part of this movement. And what I have learned even recently in coming to Anchorage, that the ways in which people show up for each other and the use of beauty, art, is often music, is often exhilarating in the, about this, because it is a creative act. It's creating something that wasn't there before, and taking often something that's a situation of suffering or loss or deprivation and changing it. And I was so inspired by seeing the Lullaby Project that Keys to Life has, and Shirley Mae Statton has been instrumental in bringing here to Anchorage. It's a national movement, but here the incarcerated individuals who are trying to get messages to their children saying what they wish they could of love and also care, and writing letters to their children, and then local musicians composing music in the cultures of the women and men who are writing these letters. So inspiring, so moving. And that's an example of a kindness that is being done, not only the impulse of people who are on the inside and are prevented from caring for their families in the way they would want, but also how musicians pick up and say, this is a message worth hearing, and hearing it from those who maybe would are most voiceless. So that's a beautiful example. And I also learned about this from actually one of our patients at Providence Hospital, how their life was touched and moved by doing art with a local nun. So I want to lift up Sister Lucia Lam Nguyen, who is working in several of the shelters, St. Francis and Clare House and Covenant House. And she is bringing art, working with vulnerable communities, unhoused and domestic violence survivors, and their families and children. And I got to visit this week at Clare House and be privy and be part of the art session that she does. And that is a beautiful example of someone who is embodying and living random kindness and senseless acts of beauty, the ways in which art is transformative. And I learned about her from one of our patients, but I saw it in action there with how the young children who are living in this shelter doing art and being able to unleash their imaginations and create something of beauty in her midst was just revolutionary and inspiring. So you have your local folks around in your own backyard.
You know, I guess to kind of start wrapping up, do you think it's hard to convince people to be kind? Is it a hard sell?
This is natural. This is the soil that we grow in. This is who we want to be to each other. This is the life that we're all longing for, that we're aching to be part of. And it's a way we want to grow in our families. It's also the way we want to grow in our neighborhoods. And it's what folks really long for in their city. is a place where there is beauty, where there is nature, where there's access for all members of the community, where there's a sense of safety and green belts. And so some of the placemaking imagination that's going on, I think the Alaska Humanities Forum had a day of storytelling where people said, let's tell a story of who we can be, who we've been, and who we can grow into, and the placemaking that came out of that. And I think that Mayor LaFrance was on board with that as well, with placemaking initiatives. And so I see the multicultural power of this city long. It's easy to see the biodiversity and the gorgeous, vast, powerful wilderness that inspires and holds this state. But the richness of the multicultural community, which is Anchorage, is perfectly situated to become a compassionate city where kindness is part of the pledge of mutual respect. We can see it as we go into Lusac Library with the multiracial stories as you approach the door. But imagine that pledge of mutual respect right on the outside of the library. And where it is part of the social compact of an agreement that we are here for each other, and that sense of pulling each other out of the ditch in the snow is actually built into the infrastructure, the DNA of who belongs. May we grow together in a sense of compassion and creating beauty and sustainability over time. It's where we can all thrive. That's the power that's calling to us. It's easy. It's in each of us.
That was Paloma Pavel, co-author of the book Random Kindness and Senseless Acts of Beauty. We were discussing the book and how you can celebrate National Random Acts of Kindness Day all year, not just tomorrow. After this, I'll be showcasing our project called Every Little Bit that recognizes people doing good in our community. I'm Ammon Swenson, and you're listening to Hometown Alaska on Alaska Public Media. We'll be right back after this break.
I'm Shelby Herbert, a reporter with the Alaska Desk. That's a joint reporting effort from Alaska Public Media and KUAC, where I work in Fairbanks, and other public radio stations in Anchorage, Haines, and the Aleutians. It allows us to connect you with the issues happening in communities all across the state. You can hear our stories during the morning news, Alaska News Nightly, or online at alaskapublic.org. The Alaska Desk is only possible with the support of grants and listeners like you. Thank you.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm producer Ammon Swenson. Earlier in the show, we heard about ways that all of us can start practicing random acts of kindness. In this segment, I'm going to tell you about a similar thing we've been working on here at Alaska Public Media. Last summer, we started a project called Every Little Bit. It recognizes people who go above and beyond to strengthen our community. The idea is to honor these people and their work and hopefully inspire others to do just a little something for the community. Let's check out one of the early ones. This first one is Brittany Clancy of Fashion Pact.
I was born and raised in Anchorage, Alaska. I loved thrifting. I just loved having something different because on top of not having a lot of thrifting in Alaska, there just wasn't a lot of shopping, period. Fashion Pact came to me over a span of several years, and I was a stay-at-home mom for 10 years before I did this, so it definitely marinated in my mind for a while before I jumped in and opened this thrift shop. Fashion Pact is a thrift store that raises money for local nonprofits and empowers individuals to support the charity or the cause that is important and dear to them. So the way Fashion Pact works is extremely original for a thrift store. We use some high-end technology. Somebody can come in and they donate items. They designate a charity. Each item that they bring in is coded with a QR code, and then that ties back to the charity that they chose. When that specific item sells, another person chooses a charity. All in all, we give 30% of each purchase back to charity. Fashion Pact has already donated $375,000 to local nonprofits. So right now we have a list of about 100 nonprofits that people have to choose from when they shop at Fashion Pact. The list has grown. We started with a dozen and we've added more on. Right now our list of charities you can choose from is only local grassroots Alaskan charities. We hope as we grow that we can be more inclusive and have even more charities join us. My motivation to give back comes from just my love of my community. I grew up, you know, behind the cash register, so I think that aspect of talking to people every day and just feeling a part of the community just has been with me for a long time, and so it seemed like a natural next step for me. I believe just in, you know, serving your neighbor, love one another, those key principles mean everything to me, and, you know, couple that with my love of the community, and I want to leave this earth better than I found it. I know my time here is limited, and so while I'm here, I hope to make it a better place for everyone.
While we're not focusing on specific organizations, some of these people's work is through various nonprofit or church organizations. My goal as the producer of Every Little Bit is to show as wide a spectrum of people doing good in as many different ways as possible. This young man's name is Salah Sadi. He juggles high school while also trying to help build community and resources for other young people.
What I do for Keys to Life is just help other teens and youth in the community get involved with community activities so they can just get connected with other teens. These events bring us out to, you know, come and communicate with one another, speak about mental health, education, and just our future, because, like, it's an awkward stage in our life where we feel like we can do everything by ourselves, but just speaking to one another can honestly help. I started working with Keys to Life when I was 9 years old with Miss Shirley.
Keys to Life has been in our community since 2015 as an organization or nonprofit that uses the arts to bring people together across the divide.
Miss Shirley came to me and she's talking about how there is a new program for kids, you know, who come from different countries and stuff like that. I am from North Sudan and I was just very interested in the program, and I was like, why not tell my story? I was young and I just wanted to speak about coming to America because it was a very exciting thing, you know. So the talk came up. I feel like men feel, just because we are men, we don't like to talk about our feelings, and men as well have feelings just like women, but we don't like to talk about them, I guess, because we feel like we're supposed to be strong and stuff like that. But you speaking about your feelings is strong in a way, because you're being brave to talk about how you feel and how things are making you feel. I just hope this thing flips a switch in someone's mind or heart or something like that, to where they want to talk about things that can just better their future for their friends and themselves.
All right, here's how you can help out. If you know someone who you'd like to nominate for Every Little Bit, you can head to alaskapublic.org/littlebit to watch what we've done so far and hit the Contact Us button at the top right of the page. You know, while opening a store, benefiting nonprofits is amazing, this one might be a little bit more approachable for most. Here's Larry Monsma talking about Team Orange.
Team Orange is a group of friends that we all met through Park Fix-It and the Waterways Council, the Anchorage Park Foundation. We were all showing up at the same Fix-It events, so we kind of got together and found parks in our neighborhoods that needed a little more work. So I got hooked up with Parks and Rec when they had their Fix-It program, which is everybody in the city going to a certain park and working on it for 3 or 4 hours. So I got to move around town, go to different parts of town and see what was out there. And then I noticed that in our still bodies of water, our lakes, our lagoons, our ponds, the trash was just collecting. And I have a kayak on a warm, sunny day. Why not go out there and, you know, pull some trash away so you don't get some Fritos bag or some Lay's potato chips bag in a bird's nest? I'd say we probably pick up between the 12 lakes we hit every year, 4,000 to 5,000 pounds every single year. We have found Nerf guns. We found a 60-pound propane tank. We found entire Makita power tool sets with batteries and everything, so who knows what that's leaking into the water. This particular body of water, we find a lot of right foot shoes. Not the left, just the right. In one area, we called it the burial ground of bicycle tires. We must have had 30 bicycle tires. No rims, no frames, just tires. All the water flows to places where we catch fish. I love Dipnet and Kenai, South Beach. I go every year with my fiance. We set up camp. We have friends that come through. But all this water eventually ends up down there. It's an easy thing to do. All you need to do is grab an old plastic bag, and as you're walking down the trail or down past one of the lakes or any stream, creek, whatever it is, you can reach down and pick up that, you know, water bottle. If it's a beautiful sunny day, it's a great reason to get out, take a nice little walk, hang out with some friends, and do some good.
I will admit that the best part of this project is getting to interview some very inspiring people for way longer than necessary for a 2+ minute video. One of those was Eagle River's Katie Arvidson, who was using her role as Miss Wheelchair Alaska USA to advocate for the mental health of people with disabilities. She kindly hosted us in her home while her two massive dogs snored loudly at her feet during the interview. I don't think the mic got it.
The crown definitely motivated me and got me out of my shell and pushed me to really start doing things. I speak about my life and my experiences and my story. I've been really vulnerable throughout this whole pageant process, and I think that is why people come up to me and say, "You changed my life." My platform title was Moving Beyond Surviving to Thriving. What I talk about is the connection between disability and mental health. I try to bring to people's attention how mental health for people with disabilities can look a little bit different than people who are not disabled. I've been able to talk at conferences and get that message out there, and people like literally start thinking, "I never thought about it that way before." It's lonely and kind of hopeless. One of the big things was losing my ability to work. I worked with kids with mental health problems in a residential setting. I mean, these were tough kids, but I really loved that work. For me, it turned into a really significant depression. Actually, until probably about 3 or 4 years ago, I started pulling myself out of it because I got mental health treatment. Being able to come at it from both perspectives, which I have, helps educate other providers. And then learning how to take care of myself and redefining my purpose. I'm doing everything I can to be involved in the community and to help others understand. And that brings me meaning and purpose and joy. I want to take my abilities and my strengths and share those with the world.
Our next batch of Every Little Bit videos will be out this spring. Once again, if you know someone doing good in your community, you can let us know by heading to alaskapublic.org/littlebit. You're listening to Hometown Alaska on Alaska Public Media. I'm producer Ammon Swenson. After this break, we'll be back with State of Art. From Alaska Public Media, this is State of Art. International Gallery of Contemporary Art last year, where she had a public exhibition called Unstuck. Visitors were invited to decorate the blank white walls of the gallery with colorful tape, either creating their own designs or adding to others' work. The walls were covered with everything from rudimentary images to messages for other visitors.
So it was really just kind of reducing us all to this sort of like childish, like, oh, it's hard to rip this and this is sticking to the scissors. And like, what about, this isn't even sticking on the wall. It's falling off. So it was fun to just, we all felt a little like out of our element, right? That's what I noticed with the tape. Yeah. But also people ran with it. They made these amazing portraits. They stood there for, you know, almost an hour making these masterpieces, taking pictures of it, and like it was just really fun. It was fun to see people, and that's exactly what I was hoping for, was something where you really got stuck in this like flow zone, right? But at the same sense, sort of unstuck yourself from whatever was going on. And even just the idea of like coming together with other people, you don't know them or what their beliefs are, or like where they stand, wherever. We're all just standing around struggling with this team. So it was really fun in that way. And I think it was, in that sense, it was a great success for me to see, right?
Yeah. And I mean, it was just cool. Like, and I think this is also maybe kind of somewhat of a through line that I've seen with your art is the variety of colors. I mean, just scrolling through like your Instagram, the various things you've produced, you tend to use a lot of color. I get the feeling that, you know, obviously some of your art, like that interactive art project, was to kind of bring people together. But like your work seems to kind of try to invoke the feeling of joy. I mean, ultimately, do you feel like that's kind of something that you want people to get out of your art?
You know, I think so. It's not something I feel like I consciously, it's not really something I set out to do, and it really just kind of comes out in the artwork. And in some ways, I think I attribute Alaska to that. I really had this sense, you know, the first couple winters, especially with the dark, which was new to me growing up in the Midwest. And, you know, wherever you grow up, it really kind of sets your compass for what you expect seasonally, right? So it really does kind of throw you off with the dark.
Whoa.
But the weird thing was like, I loved it. I loved the winter, and I loved the feeling of being like the spark of life in this, like, you know, dead landscape. It made me feel extremely productive to wake up at 11 o'clock and then it'd be dark by 3 and be like, well, that's a day. Like, you know, I felt really great in that. Something about that really made me feel like, bah, like this explosion of color. And
yeah, well, I mean, it's like you're being proactive with just like adding light and color into your life in a dark period.
Yeah, yeah. And also, I think, you know, the dark, it's really this, I don't know if a lot of us really realize this, but it's like this great opportunity to play with the dark. I mean, I did so much fun stuff with light and shadows with the kids during these winters, and it's stuff that I had never really gotten into before, but there was just so much opportunity to do that now, right?
Outside of, you know, this other stuff, the last few years you've done a handful of murals around Matsu Valley, but these are kind of unique murals. You're not painting a big thing on the wall. Could you talk about some of these things that you've done?
So this was such a random thing. I think it was in 2022 when I first started talking to someone about this, and it was an animal hospital in Palmer, and so they had this kind of unique problem, which was they had this beautiful new waiting room with a huge echo problem. And if we're talking about an animal hospital, you can imagine like barking dogs, and like it was bad. So this beautiful blank canvas, you know, big white walls, and we want something, you know, artistic and not so cold and clinical. There was a lot of like stainless steel everywhere and things. And as you know, sound panels can be a little bit boring. It's kind of like one color, a lot of geometric forms.
Yeah, and black or gray.
Yes, yeah. So I think they wanted to avoid that really clinical feeling. So it's like, how do we solve this echo problem while putting something out here that really can sort of calm the nerves of someone sitting with, you know, their dog who needs to be seen and things like that. So it was really fun to brainstorm that. And we found this material, which is like, and it's sold again to like, you know, universities and things for their libraries to help mitigate the sound. And it's the kind of a felt composite board. So like wool felt mixed with plastic, a lot of recycled plastic. And it's thinnish. It's like a quarter of an inch to a half an inch thick. But what I found working with the samples that they gave me was that I was able to use a couple different tools to shape it and put it together just like you would like a painted mural, right? So we could make these big free-flowing forms. We could incorporate negative space with these cool textural elements. But it was really like starting from scratch. Like I had never worked with this before. There were no like guides anywhere for how to use it this way. But yeah, it's been a really fun challenge. So it went from that waiting room, which turned out pretty well, to the elementary school library in Chugiak. And then we just finished the Wasilla Public Library in their children's area. And right now I'm working on a conference room in Palmer. But yeah.
How does that make you feel to kind of have your art also serve this very practical
functionality.
It's like, so cool, right? I mean, it kind of takes me back to sort of this like Midwestern sense of at least I'm doing something, right?
Gotta get it done. We need this done.
Like, it's useful. So I think it really satisfies that part of me. And also, it's just been really cool to jump into that side of things. Like, I've learned so much about acoustics and like these ratings that they give materials for how much they absorb sounds. And I'm so much more aware of it when I'm walking around now. And just how it influences us, like the sound environment we're in. I mean, we may not think about it, but it can make a huge difference in our mood and our mindset if it's like a chaotic sort of echoey environment versus the sound studio, which is like eerily quiet. But yeah, it's just been really cool.
So like, obviously, your work is diverse. I feel like just scrolling through your Instagram, like, okay, that's something different. What's that? That's something different. But like, what types of materials maybe do you lean towards or prefer working with? Or are you just kind of always trying to chase something new, different ways to, you know, approach a different medium?
Yeah, I definitely don't feel boxed into any medium. I mean, I do a lot of painting. I've done ceramic work. And I think a lot of that, too, is like a little bit of my naivete and a little bit of hubris, right? Which is like, let me try this out. Like, I don't know, just this very sense of like this very strong sense of like life is short and whatever's in front of me, like I'm going to play with. So I got into paper, and I think that is one material I am definitely repeatedly drawn to. And part of it's just because there's so much of it everywhere. And part of that goes back to teaching and knowing copy machines and having piles of discarded handouts from my classes. So I think it really does come back to that just sort of practical sense of like what's in front of me and how can I manipulate this. So paper is one I definitely come back to a lot.
I feel like you must find writing fulfilling in some way. Otherwise, you wouldn't keep doing it, be teaching it, stuff like that. But I mean, do you find writing and maybe the visual art fulfill you in separate ways, but maybe like necessary ways, like writing feeds this part of my soul, art feeds this part
of
my soul, is it the same thing?
Yeah, that's fair. I'm not sure. So with writing, I don't know. I think I've always been the kind of person who I definitely feel more comfortable expressing myself in writing versus speaking. I've never felt especially confident speaking. I have kind of a quiet voice too, so I'm one of those people who are always like, what? So I feel really self-conscious when I speak, but when I write, I feel much more comfortable and I can kind of rearrange things. So I think it, I mean, writing-wise, though, I don't feel like I'm the best creative writer. In my creative writing pursuits, I've never felt really satisfied with what I produced. So I kind of gave up on the sense of, like, this is something I want to put out in the world. I feel kind of embarrassed in my creative writing.
Or maybe it's just, like, when it becomes a career as well, that can kind of maybe diminish some of that creativity
or
something,
maybe. I did enjoy my time, like, doing the freelance writing, and I haven't completely given up on that, but I just found more satisfaction there sort of interviewing others and getting their stories out than I did sort of creating my own story.
That's where I'm at. I totally hear you.
Yeah. So and then with teaching, it's the same idea. Like, I feel very happy to help a student sort of develop their writing voice and comfort and confidence with writing. So that's where I found myself with writing.
Exciting news. Can you tell me about the Rasmussen grant that you received?
Yes, gosh, I'm so appreciative and excited about that. So it was a project that was really started a couple years ago. I had reached out to David Bechkol, who works with the National Park Service, and I had this idea of using, they do this amazing work out there where they collect sound data, and they use, and I learned so much from this, like they use it for all sorts of applications, one of which being just sort of to see how the environment changes year to year. It's like another way to sort of assess just environmental changes, right?
Yeah.
So I was fascinated by this, and I was fascinated by these things that they create, which are spectrograms, and they're basically visual representations of these sounds, the sound data that they're collecting. So if you've ever seen one, they're kind of like, they look like these jagged landscapes, right? It's showing the volume and it's showing the pitch, and they're just really fun to watch. They're animated a lot of times. And so I started playing with this. I started making these like tiny recordings at home. One time I recorded like popcorn popping, and I found an app where it would make like kind of a really basic spectrogram. But I was like, I wonder what this would look like in a paper sculpture. And so I started to create these tiny little paper sculptures to just sort of encapsulate this little sound moment, you know, of this popcorn popping. I had a video of my dog snoring. And it was so fun to like compare those two, right? The popcorn popping was just all over the place. And then the dog snoring was this really rhythmic kind of lower pitched. So that's kind of how that started. But yeah, David was very supportive. I went out to Denali with him and we kind of hiked off grid, and he showed me how he collects the data, and like it was just the coolest thing ever. So
some, like, recording stations out there.
Yes,
like
in the middle of nowhere, and it felt like the secretive thing, right? Because they don't want people to mess with them.
Totally.
So that was really fun. And so we collected this data, and then what I had done, so obviously the recordings are going like all summer, and then when I went home, you know, to the valley, I was just making these intermittent recordings around the house, you know, walks with the kids or wind blowing through the trees or like a noisy, you know, drive-through event or something. And the idea was like, you know, I wonder what it sounds like in Denali, you know, at our little station right now, you know, like what's the sound there versus this moment here, and what do those look like side by side visually. So the project is basically going to be a set of sculptures, a set of like kind of a visual art exhibit to look at different moments in sound simultaneously in spectrogram form.
Yeah, we're looking at sound visually in like sculpture form. That's so cool.
And I want to have the recordings with them so that the viewer can sort of, you know, see, kind of hear what they're seeing.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that will work out.
Do you think that this may be opening up more opportunities to kind of do more maybe science adjacent artwork, maybe?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, it's definitely something I'm drawn to, kind of the science and art interplay. But I also don't, in some ways, I feel like there's a little bit of pressure in Alaska to go in that direction. You know, obviously we're very conservation focused, which I think is amazing. But I want to avoid that just a little bit, at least any feeling of like pressure to have to, I don't know, save anything with my art, really.
Yeah.
I think it's more of like, I just want to sort of observe, right? And sort of share what these observations and let the viewer kind of decide from there.
It sounds like you're somebody that kind of just needs to keep moving a bit and like, I don't know, kind of mixing it up quite a bit. I can't imagine you get stuck in too many artistic routines, or do you?
Yeah, no, it does go a little bit all over. But yeah, I think as you said before, I think I really have this goal of like exploration and sort of community involvement and kind of exploring different senses and things too. So I'm not ruling out maybe this path of like this interplay of art and science, but for right now I'm just kind of focusing on
But if you do, you'll probably be simultaneously doing something else.
Right.
Addie, thank you so much for coming in. It was great to get to know you and hear about all your endeavors. Congratulations on the Rasmussen Award. And good luck with everything you've got coming up.
Thank you so much.
That was my conversation with Addie Studebaker. She's an artist based in the Mat-Su and is a Rasmussen Individual Artist Award recipient. We'll have links and more info on our website. And that's all for State of Art. And that's all for our show. Thanks for joining us today for Hometown Alaska. Special thanks to our guest, Paloma Pavel. Find us on the web at alaskapublic.org, the Alaska Public Media app, or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm producer Ammon Swenson. Thanks for listening.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.